This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
The Scotland Outdoors Podcast from BBC Radio Scotland.
Hello and thanks for downloading the Scotland Outdoors Podcast. I'm Mark Stephen. This podcast features a remarkable man. I caught up with him recently, not that terribly far away from my home in the northeast of Scotland. His name's Chris Lewis, and I'll let him tell you what it is he's been doing for the last few years and is still continuing to do.
I am walking the coastline of the United Kingdom. I started in Swansea on the 1st of August 2017, and yeah, 3.5 years later, still going.
Why are you doing it?
Well, you know, there's two reasons. One, obviously, I'm raising money for charity SAFR, which is a veterans charity who supported me when I fell in hard times, being an ex-soldier myself. And also, personal reasons, if I'm perfectly honest with you, before I left for this, you know, I think I was slightly anxious, you know, maybe a bit depressed, if I'm perfectly honest, and I knew I needed to change something and just randomly came up with the idea one day and just left.
It is an awfully long way.
It is, yeah. The UK is surprising, you know. Certainly Scotland with all the locks, and, you know, we've done the islands as well. So, you know, the thing is, and there are other people that have done similar things, but what's taken us so long, when I say us, I mean me and my dog Jet, and now my girlfriend Kate, is the fact they're actually sticking to the coast. So, you know, that's a whole new ball game all on its own. No roads, you know, a lot of Scotland's very wild, and it's intricate.
There's an awful lot of the coast isn't pathed either. So how far inland are you prepared to let yourself go?
Well, I don't. This is the thing. You know, we literally stick to the coast. So even if it's unpathed, which is, you know, it's taken me a couple of days, what would normally take me a couple of hours to do, you know, just from the terrain and, you know, depending on what type of year it is, you know, how rough and rugged that is with regards to like fern, heather and stuff like this and peat bogs. So, you know, it's very intricate and very slow going. So you've got to be patient and you know, just keep moving forward. That's the main thing.
Effectively, the terrain is dictating your pace.
Absolutely, 100%, yeah. You can never plan something like this. It's, you know, more so being on the East Coast, it is a bit easier in that respect, but certainly the West Coast and the islands, you know, the terrain and the weather were everything. So you could wake up one day and you've got 60, 70 mile an hour winds hitting into you, and which can be dangerous if you're, you know, if it's blowing towards the sea. So, you know, that can obviously pin us down. So there have been days where I've just been sat in the tent for 4 days, you know, laying on my side and hoping it stops.
I know you're a former member of the parachute regiment.
Yes.
Tell me what life was like when you actually came out of the army.
It was surreal, you know, very different. You know, life was very different. You know, I was never the best with things like money and stuff like this anyway. So, yeah, it was just that contrast of, you know, when you're in the forces, you have, you know, somewhere to stay, you have food constantly on the table for you, so you can literally go out and spend all your money on a weekend and you'll be okay for the rest of the month. But obviously there's a harsh reality when you come into Civvy Street. We call it Millionaire's Weekend.
just go wild.
Yeah, just go wild, who cares, have a great one, you know. But, you know, obviously the reality does hit, and, you know, I found it very difficult because I was always moving about to be in one spot, and I've always been the same, so I've never actually settled anywhere. Which is why I think one of the reasons that I've settled into this so easily is, you know, I like the idea of being in different places all the time rather than just being one spot.
You ended up living on the streets at one stage.
Yes. Yeah, so I had a few financial difficulties, and like many, you know, it really got to me, and I let it get to me. And, you know, I ended up being evicted. So, yeah, on more than one occasions, I found myself, you know, homeless. And, you know, it was an eye-opening experience, if I'm perfectly honest with you. But obviously, bit of training for this. That's the only way I can look at it.
Tell me about this, because, I mean, you know, the next obvious question is, how are you able to do this? Because it takes a lot of time, it takes resources. It must take some money anyway.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, I left for this walk, you know, as I said before, I wasn't in the best place, and, you know, to be honest with you, I just always had this faith that I'd find a way. And, you know, I've been learning to forage, so I thought, you know, worst comes to worst, I'll do that. But, and it was a serious struggle, I'd say, in the first 9 months before people knew what I was doing. But then, you know, once people did realise what I was doing, you know, they are wonderful and they wanted to start helping. So by that, I mean, you know, they were helping to bring food, and they still continue to do that this day. And yeah, I have had a couple of donations financially as well. So, you know, I had no idea how this was going to go. But to see the way it has turned out, and obviously seeing that good side of people, even more so, when we're in times of a pandemic like we are now, you know, it just brings out the best in humans, and you know, I'm very proud of that.
One of the things I've always fancied doing, you know, is an old school pilgrimage.
Yeah,
you know, there's an Earl up in Orkney who one day walked out his front door. No money, no resources, just a, you know, a pilgrim's staff and a pilgrim's hat and a pilgrim's badge. Yeah. And he walked to Jerusalem.
Wow, yeah.
You know, and I've always thought to myself, that absolute surrendering of self, of relying on the kindness of others, must be incredibly liberating in a way.
It's unbelievably liberating, you know. There's been times, I mean, I can understand it. You know, one of the beauties of this is, you know, there's a lot of times where that isn't the case, or, you know, you are without food, and it's really, really difficult. You know, it can make you very anxious, especially when you're walking, so you need to keep energy going.
Yeah.
But when it does eventually happen, or something does happen when you're not expecting it to and you're in a bad position, I cannot tell you how good that feels. Yeah. You know, it's like I always say, I'd rather take 30 bad days of weather and have a couple of good days, because those good days, you know, you appreciate so much more.
Yeah, so shines a good deed in a dark world.
Exactly that, exactly.
Yeah. When you were coming round the top, you know, you're going around Shetland, you ended up staying on an island by yourself for how long?
So it was just over 3 months, yeah, for the lockdown. It was either I just stayed on a bit of a coast where I knew people would probably want to come and say hello, and, you know, I didn't want to be breaking any rules. So a fisherman, Victor, and his son James said that, you know, there's an island called Hildesay, do you want to go and stay there? So I thought, you know, well, if ever there's a good time to practice foraging and learn, that'll be the place. So that's exactly what I'd done. So, yeah, I stayed there for the lockdown, and you know, I have to say, as lonely as it was and being on my own, you know, I had no electric, water, running gas or anything like this. It was some experience, you know, looking back on it, as hard as it was.
And what on earth were you foraging? Because it can't have been the best time of year for it.
No, well, that's the thing. One of the things that doing what I'm doing is you're on the move all the time, so you don't have the luxury of spending weeks, you know, learning where the best foraging things are. So, you know, for me, predominantly, as long as I was carrying vegetables and stuff, then I could just live off shellfish, things like limpets, whelks, crab. Which is pretty much what I'd done, but I don't want people to think, you know, that was the only source of food that I had, because lovely fishermen were coming over and bringing me over some fresh supplies of...
Bless them.
So, yeah, and I even practiced foraging for lobster and stuff like this, and was successful on occasion. So, yeah, you know, the only time it was really, you know, between me and just being on the island and having no backup was simply when the weather was bad, which was a lot of the time. So, yeah, it wasn't easy.
So where are you actually staying at the moment?
So we're in Belholm Woods. I'm probably going to get told off for my pronunciation on that one, which is basically...
I'm not going to argue with you. I've never heard of it.
Yeah, basically just a woodland area where we're camped up there, but we've, you know, kept ourselves busy. We've made ourselves a little woodland home out of wood that we foraged from the floor, and just kept ourselves busy that way. But yeah, we've just had a bit of a beast worth of weather. So to have the sun out, I mean, like...
You're camping during that snow?
Yeah. We were out the whole time. But yeah, you know, we still made the most of it. You know, we have a frisbee. What else do you need?
You must have a really remarkable partner, because I can't see my wife putting up with
that. No, I know. Well, I have. I'm going to have to big her up here, aren't I?
Yeah, I'm afraid so.
She is, you know, Kate's an adventurer herself. She loves the outdoors. And, you know, what a woman to come out in the midst of winter, basically starting this walk with me. And not only... Well, she enjoys it. You know, she actually enjoys it. So, yeah, I've definitely met my kindred spirit on that respect.
How did you actually end up in Gordon?
So, the reason we've came down here is there were certain, you know, factors that we were looking for. One, having a bit of signal somewhere where we're relatively close to a shop, and obviously not so completely exposed on the coast. You know, we're in woodland now, so, you know, we want to abide by the lockdown rules like everybody else. So,
yeah,
so what happens next is once lockdown finishes, then we go back up to Slane's Castle and effectively come past here again in about a month's time. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's where we're at. But, yeah, those attributes are the reasons that we're here in this particular section of woodland and not where we were, because we would have ended up staying in an underground bunker, which wouldn't have been very fun. And it was all damp down there as well.
No, one of the old civil defence ones.
Yes, exactly that.
Oh, no.
Exactly that.
No.
You know, but the way I look at it, it's the same with the last lockdown. You know, if the country's in lockdown, then who am I to, you know, not do the same? So, and also, you know, it's really nice. We've got a good platform on social media, you know, on my page. So, you know, it's really nice to show that how Kate and I keep going and what we do, even in the worst of weathers. And hopefully that inspires other people to realise, you know, that there are things you can do and continue with, you know. And, you know, we make sure that lockdown for us has been about learning more things, getting fit, eating healthy. So, you know, we're just trying to make the best of a bad situation, and that's exactly what we'll continue doing.
Again, forgive me for picking over the details of this. How do you make sure you're eating the right things when you don't have entirely control over your diet? And how have you been staying fit?
So we made our own little woodland gym to keep fit. You know, literally picking up logs and stuff like this. A bit of a Rocky-style training regime going on there. But, you know...
Dolph Lundgren, watch yourself.
Yeah, because nobody can see this is a radio interview. I'll pretend I'm built like that.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, me too.
Yeah. I'll pay you to say it. You know, again, just local communities are just wonderful. And I've loved Scotland. And I'm not just saying this because, you know, I'm talking to you now. I've really fallen in love with Scotland and the communities and the people and the islands. So they're bending over backwards to make sure that we're safe and everything like this. And, you know, we have to do a lot of work with regards to going out and collecting wood. And often enough, we'll come back to the tent and there's a little bag of food laying by the side of the tent with a little message in it. So, yeah, it's just amazing. It really is.
Yeah, no, I'm glad to hear that. Do you bother planning ahead? Do you bother trying to sort of schedule or timetable what you're going to be doing next? Because there's no idea, really.
No, and this is one of the beauties of it. You know, I think one of the things that I wanted to get away from was the planning. You know, that day-to-day routine of being up at this time, doing this, doing that. You know, and also, I don't think you can do something like this if you plan it, because you just never know what's going to go wrong. So one day at a time, and just make it every day count. That's the only way I've done it since I started. And that's what I do till I finish, and hopefully throughout the rest of my life, if I'm honest.
What's it done for your sort of mental well-being?
I've done this on my own up until Kate joined me a few months ago. And, you know, I told you before I left, you know, possibly not in the best place that a human could be. And what this has really, really done is just stripped all of the clutter, you know, all of what I thought was the madness of the day-to-day life, you know, the bills, the debts, all these kind of things that so many of us struggle with, you know, as a single parent. And it's just stripped that away from me. So what started happening, certainly when I got into Scotland and the more barren parts and on the islands, my focus then became the most simple things in life, which was making sure that I pitched the tent in a place where I'd be warm and it didn't get blown down, making sure that I had something to eat and just being so grateful when I did. And obviously, you know, keeping an eye on Jet and looking after Jet. So that became such a focus that everything else just seemed to have washed away. And over time, I became good at it. And actually, I'm really excited about it now. So the change from when I started up until now, and I think you could ask anyone who's followed since I started, is quite significant. So that thing of being on your own and finding yourself, you know, I don't mean that to sound cheesy, but I think it's very important.
Most people don't get the chance to do that nowadays. Life's just too fast.
Most people don't get a chance or don't make the chance.
Well, that's a fair point.
You know, I was the same position. You know, I had to be that person to say, right, I just need to give up everything and make a go. It was a shot in the dark. It could have all gone horribly wrong. You know, it could have gone totally the opposite to the way it has. But, you know, I'm a big believer that with hard work, persistence and, you know, just that... self-belief, I suppose, then anything's possible, and that's exactly how it's worked out, and I'm really pleased. I couldn't be happier.
What you're doing is obviously highly unusual, so please don't take it wrong when I say I've met quite a few people like you, and again, this sounds a bit cheesy, spiritually, that you expect kindness more than you expect the reverse.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Listen, there is so many good people out there. I mean, the world is littered with it. You know, how much of that we hear through anything, you know, whether it be television, you know, is up to you to decide whether you listen to it or not. So, you know, one of the I listen to a lot of the negativity and even negative people, you know, who are also everywhere. But I just decided one day that, you know, unless there's something I can do to help somebody like that, you know, I kind of just tend to block it out because, you know, it's so important to remain positive and you know, keep that fire lit, and it's very hard to do when you're surrounded by so much negativity all the time.
Yeah.
And being in my own, you know, headspace in that respect and spending so long on my own really made me realise this. Yeah, I suppose you could call it a spiritual thing.
Well, this next question's not going to sound cheesy. It is actually cheesy. What was your... I mean, of the whole trip so far, and I don't know how many thousand kilometres you've done so far, but of the whole trip you've done so far, what was your lowest point?
Well, that's a really good question. Blimey, that's a good question, and it goes back to, again, I kind of focus on the other, but You know, I've had some low points. I've hurt myself. I've had to pull my own teeth out.
What?
I've had to do many things that have been real challenges. Uh-huh. But I wouldn't say there's so much low points. Look, any time that you've got a low point is a real good chance to build some resilience. So I always looked at it as a, you know, I don't want to try and make it sound like I'm the most positive person in the world because I have days like everybody else. But
and Pollyanna can be so tough.
Yeah, exactly. Right. I now know that I can pull my own teeth out. What a bonus, eh? I would say a low point, I mean, probably more than anything, is the relentless days of sitting in the tent in summer when the midges are out. Okay. Three seasons of it. Yeah. You know, it's hard enough to put up with them for a weekend, let alone three seasons in a tent. So, yeah, I really found that mentally very hard. It was essentially like sitting in a sauna in my tent because it was so hot. They were hard times. They really, really were.
Yeah. And the obverse of that question, the other side of the coin, what's your golden, you know, the best memory of the entire trip?
Well, I have two. Well, three.
Go on.
Three. I also have a card for cheese on this one. But I would say meeting Jet was my first gold card.
Where'd you meet her?
So I met her on the west coast of Scotland in Irvine. Uh-huh. I adopted her there. I'm from a family that's sadly no longer able to have her anymore. I adopted her there and she's been with me ever since. So
she's a bit like Greyhound on steroids.
Yeah. She's a powerful dog.
She's a powerful dog.
Oh, she is indeed. But she's so lovely. Obviously meeting her and, you know, doing all of the islands with her. The second would be my restoration and restore of faith in humanity. And, you know, I think I'd lost that a bit before I started. Like I said before, focusing on the negatives all the time. And, you know, to have so much love just come your way and how much people want to help and what they do to go out of their way to want to help you is quite phenomenal. Obviously that has been just a massive turning point in my life. And then thirdly, obviously meeting Kate. That's just been, you know, to think that I started this on my own, slightly broken, and then to have so many wonderful people behind me, my dog Jet, and now a beautiful girlfriend, you know, who's doing the rest of this with me. It just goes back to what I was saying. You keep at it and good things can happen, you know. And yeah, they would have to be my three most defining points.
And the good defining points. You mentioned your daughter a couple of times, yep. You know, and the fact that you're a single parent. So how is it that you are free now to actually walk around the coast of the UK?
Okay, so, when my daughter, she left home to go down to college in Bournemouth, which is where her mother lives. So, and then obviously with intention to go to university afterwards. So, you know, once I knew Caitlin was happy and she was safe and well, and, you know, I think that was my ticket. This wasn't a plan. I need you to know that. You know, it was a very spare of the moment decision. So it wasn't like...
All the best adventures are like
exactly. It was just a real spare of the moment thought. And so, you know, at the end of the day, Caitlin's happy. I'm happy. We keep in touch as often as we possibly can. That's the most important thing, you know. And I can't wait to get back and see her.
How much money do you think you've raised so far?
So we're at 181,000 so far. Don't tell anyone, but I'm hoping for about $250,000 before I finish this.
Excellent.
That's the next target.
Yeah. I'm sure you'll manage it. At all.
Why not, eh? Why not? Yeah. Go big or go home.
What about, you know, again, almost an impossible question to answer, I would have thought, what about when this walk finishes? What are you going to do?
That's a good question. So, you know, obviously it's starting to come to... Finishing the islands was obviously another actual point that I should have spoken about. It was huge. Because it's once I'd finished Shetland, you know, certainly knowing after a while that I was probably going to be hitting it in winter was going to be my biggest challenge.
You didn't do all the islands in Shetland, though, did you?
Yeah.
Every single one?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. We did all of the islands that were inhabited. I did some that weren't inhabited. But depending on the weather, was whether or not I could get over by boat to the tiny, tiny islands. But otherwise, yeah, we did all of the islands. You know, walked around them all. But, you know, finishing Shetland in winter... And getting on that boat back to the north of Scotland, I think was the moment where I realised I've got this. You know, this is in the bag. The rest of
it's downhill all
the
way from
here. Basically, you're right. You know, the weather was absolutely brutal up there, and it was so testing. So yeah, I think that was obviously a huge point. Coming back to the mainland after finishing the islands, I realised that, you know, I've got this, and that's huge.
You will be questioning the stability of, you know, my mental state when I say, would it surprise you to hear that I actually really envy you?
Well, everybody does until they get in the tent, you know. But no, I totally get that. You know, I think, you know, there's a little part in all of us, you know, that seeks that adventure, you know, that would just like to just disappear into the wilderness for however long. And, you know, quite understandably so. You know, we've done it for, what, 50,000 years before we started, you know, before things changed for us, houses, mobile phones, all this kind of thing. So, you know, I think there's a big part of that in all of us. And, yeah, I can't blame people. But actually, the reality is very, very different. You know, it's a lot of hard work. And, you know, you just have to be prepared to take it on the chin every time it does. And you can't control any of it, which is why you can't plan. So, yeah, I don't blame people for envying me to do this. I really don't. But, yeah, it's not as easy as what people think, despite the pretty photographs.
Chris Lewis, who's walking the coastline of the United Kingdom. Let's hope he's able to get back on the road again soon.